Easy Shoppen mit PayPal. Geht jetzt auch im Laden. Ob Späti oder Club, mit PayPal bezahlst du auch im Real Life einfach und sicher. Und in Restaurants und Bars gibt's sogar noch 5% Cashback, wenn du mit PayPal zahlst. Tipp dir mehr mit PayPal. Alle Infos auf paypal.de. 5% Cashback nur auf Einkäufe vor Ort in Restaurants und Bars in Deutschland bei kontaktloser Zahlung mit PayPal. Gültig vom 2. Juni bis 19. Juli 2026 für die ersten 850.000 berechtigten Kunden. Maximal 15 Euro Cashback pro Konto. Es gelten Bedingungen auf paypal.de.
Stu does America.
Watch this stupid little show completely free on YouTube at youtube.com/StuDoesAmerica, or you know, be a sucker and pay for it at blazetv.com/Stu. Promo code is Stu. You can also listen to it on podcasts. There's a lot of different ways to access the show, and we appreciate you doing so. Over now 1,002, I think, episodes. By the way, get your Stu Does America merch. That's available as well. StuDoesMerch.com. The code is Stu10 for 10% off. The rhinos are trying to undermine an important red state. Sarah Gonzalez is here with the details. Donald Trump is continuing to do what Joe Biden isn't and preparing to actually, like, run a government. We'll look at what is to come there. But we're going to start by doing the Los Angeles wildfires. What a freaking scene out there, man. This is really, really nuts. This is a footage of what it's like to fly into LAX these days at night. Actually, it's nights at night. You just see, you know, the typical hills that you always see when you fly into Los Angeles. And then just half of the whole mountain kind of just on fire. A terrifying scene. I mean, it looks like one of those like coal mines that like lights on fire and a town has to close down and evacuate all the residents and just the whole city's just on fire for years and years and years and years. That's terrifying. And it's in Los Angeles. Very, very strange. Palisades fire growing to 17,000 acres. This is now the most destructive in the history of Los Angeles. There's new fires popping up all over the place in the Hollywood Hills and all over these areas that, you know, you see movies in all the time that all these famous people live. And like, I think there is a tendency, like if I'm living in another part of the country, to say, like if I'm in North Carolina, I'm like, hey, my entire state just got wiped out by a hurricane. Am I really supposed to get this fired up about this? I mean, I understand it's a big deal, but like, does anyone care about us? I kind of understand that. And on the other hand, it's just such a bizarre place and a bizarre circumstance that I can understand why it's on television all the time. It's sort of like the disaster movie principle, where if you're going to build a disaster movie, it's not going to be like some random town in Idaho that gets hit by the giant tidal wave or earthquake. It's going to be Los Angeles or New York, because all the familiar buildings are there. All the stuff that you kind of see in the media is always there. And that's what kind of draws people to it. I mean, it's just strange things happen in Los Angeles. And when something like this is going on, it gets really, really, really weird. Like, how many times have you watched an interview where, you know, a news person's out there talking to somebody in the street and they're just discussing, you know, what's going on and what they've done to evacuate? You've seen that, you know, interview 1,000 times. How are you trying to save your house from the hurricane or the flood? And the person's like, oh, we're doing our best. I gotta, you know, we really recommend that people do this and this and this. We've seen that a million times, but you probably have never seen it exactly like this.
Here on Palisades Drive, if anybody has a car and they leave their car, leave the keys in the car. Right. So that we can move your car, yeah. So that these fire trucks can get up Palisades Drive.
Yeah.
What's happening is people take their keys with them as if they're in a parking lot. This is not a parking lot.
Yeah.
We really need people to move their cars. So yeah. If you leave your car in Palisades Drive, leave the key in there so a guy like me can move your cars and get them up there so that these fire trucks can get up there. It's really, really important.
Thank you for talking to us live, sir. What's your name?
My name is Steve Gutenberg.
Steve, do you live in this area?
I live in the area. Yeah, I live right up the hill.
Steve Gutenberg, the guy from Police Academy? Yeah, the guy from Police Academy. It's just weird, right? Like, that is a very strange thing, and they didn't apparently recognize him. I think they eventually did after he said his name, and probably a producer was in his ear. Like, that's the actor! Like, ask him about that! Ask him about when Police Academy 9 is coming out! He's a guy, he's not an actor right now. He's a guy trying to protect his house, trying to protect his community. And like, it is a very strange thing to watch. And you do feel for these people, even if they are rich, liberal celebrities, a lot of them, you feel for them. And it's very, very destructive situation. Now, of course, it's not all left-wing celebrities. Of course, there's basically one right-wing celebrity. It's James Woods. But it was interesting to see him on CNN. And he was talking to CNN. You think, oh, gosh, well, how is this going to go? They're probably going to ask him if he's responsible for climate change that led to this fire or something. But no, they were actually really respectful. And it was quite a moment with James Woods.
I posted this on X, but Sarah was on with her 8-year-old niece last night. She came out, I'm sorry, just, you know, one day you're swimming in the pool and the next day it's all gone. But she came out with her little Yeti piggy bank for us to rebuild our house.
Oh my gosh. James Woods, we all hope that you will be able to rebuild your house, maybe starting with that little Yeti piggy bank. And we're just glad that you're okay and your wife is okay.
I'm sorry,
and have your lives.
I'm usually,
yeah, no, real and it's raw.
I thought
and
I would be stronger than this.
Strength is not measured by whether, you know, you hold in crying or not. Strength is what you are doing now and helping your neighbors and shining a light on the great, amazing work of all those firefighters and emergency crews out there.
It really is devastating. I mean, you know, James Wood is a great guy. He's been a friend of the Blaze and now having to deal with something like this. Now, luckily, you know, he's probably in a financial position to deal with this, but there's so much else that goes into it. It is interesting, too, to watch the reaction by a lot of people. I've seen pretty much almost exclusively real outpouring of support and empathy for the people out there, which is the appropriate reaction. One of these things. It used to be how we reacted all the time. It did seem a lot different than what we saw with the healthcare executive who got shot in the back of the head in his back exactly in New York. I don't know. I mean, I guess actors are rich people we're supposed to feel bad for, but healthcare executives, it's fine if they get murdered. I don't know exactly how this works, but it is it's an interesting line we're drawing. If nothing else, something interesting to notice. James Woods was also on Fox News, and he was talking about some of the problems. And, like, you know, it's not just a natural disaster. A natural disaster is a real thing, and you have to deal with it sometimes. And it can be really, really ugly. But it's also kind of been strange incompetence and strange priorities by the state of California and local officials.
And our new fire chief, has. And by the way, L.A. Fire Department is fantastic. The people, it's like the people who work for the federal government. So many of such good people, you know. But the people in charge, she took over and she put on her bio that her priority, my highest priority, is inclusion, diversity, and equity. That is my priority. And somebody forgot to fill all the reservoirs, I guess, with water, because when I was getting smoke alarms, there was a fire truck parked in front of my house, but they couldn't pump any water because there was none, because they didn't put them in the reservoirs. Okay? And they're busy cutting, you know, look, it's the same we had with all the crime we have in our neighborhood, in Los Angeles, when we had that idiot Gascon. You know, they just didn't care.
Now, DEI, of course, very important when you're fighting fires. I only want my house and a fire that it happens to be engulfing my home to be put out by someone from Mongolia. That's just my personal stand. It's very, very important to me. I think most people, though, are the opposite. Most people don't care what color the person is who's putting out a fire. They just want the fire to be put out. They want water to be available to the fire department. Seems like a pretty good idea, but diversity, equity, and inclusion is really important. And of course, this particular fire chief was praised. This is a report from 2022, looking at how groundbreaking this particular fire chief is.
I'm super inspired.
She took time out of her already busy schedule to tell us about her vision for the department's future, one that includes a 3-year strategic plan to increase diversity.
People ask me, well, what number are you looking for? I said, I'm not looking for a number. It's never enough.
Out of 3,300 city firefighters, only 115 are women right now. She's already looking at ways to change that. She's quick to point out that doing so has a greater purpose, attracting the best and brightest for the job.
They feel included, they feel valued, and they feel part of a cohesive team.
The chief also checks another box when it comes to inclusivity and diversity at this department. She's a proud member of the LGBTQ community.
That just kind of opens the door of people that thought, wow, I didn't even know that that was an opportunity for me.
Wow, thank God we've got a woman who likes chicks ahead of our fire department, because that's the important feature that you need. It really, really matters who she wants to go to bed with when you're talking about it. Can you put a fire out? And thank God they focused on all the appropriate things. Look, Natural disasters are natural disasters. They are called natural disasters for a reason. They will happen, and there's not much you can do about it. You can do things to minimize the damage. You can do things to stop them as quickly as possible. You can do things to prepare yourself for natural disasters. And California's done none of it. They've done none of it. They've been worried about diversity, equity, and inclusion and climate change over and over and over again. I don't know. Can we stop people in Indiana from buying SUVs? That should stop our problem here with fires. They didn't do the basics. They didn't worry about the underbrush. They didn't worry about the water supply over and over and over again. They didn't worry about the things they were supposed to worry about. And they brag constantly about being the center of environmental policy, the place where all the environmental policies go to survive, unlike some place like Texas or Florida where they go to die. And at the end of the day, what you have is a situation where it just shines a spotlight on them to say that none of this stuff works. Like, they are the greenest state out there. And what do? In a situation like this, they can't stop a fire. They can't even get water to stop a fire. I mean, I don't know if you know this. California has a pretty large coastline, lots of natural resources. Water should be something they should be able to handle, and yet they can't. What are they going to do? Well, of course, they're going to blame climate change, right? They're going to blame that SUV in Indiana. They're going to say that you taking your family on a trip to Disneyland in an airplane is really what caused all of their problems over there. This is nonsense. Now, is there some factor that climate change had in this? I mean, it's possible on the fringes, right? I mean, you know, the temperature has risen about a degree over the past century Celsius. Is that the difference between this being a 10 on the fire scale to from a 9.8 on the fire scale? It's possible. Right. It could be a little more dry. You know, they have a dry period all the time. Santa Ana winds are there all the time. These factors are there all the time. And it's just a matter of which year does everything kind of hit at the same moment. But whatever, you want to assign a very small percentage of it to climate change. OK, I don't know how you would actually be able to quantify that. But whatever, like the issue here is not whether there's some tiny fringe problem with climate change in this situation. The problem is that they're going to look at their options. All these officials in California are going to look at their options. They're going to say, every single explanation for this points to us, except climate change. So what we're going to do is we're going to blame this entire thing on climate change. We're going to say it over and over and over and over and over again. We're going to make it seem as if burning coal 50 years ago is really the reason we're having these problems today. This is insultingly stupid to anyone with a brain, but they will do it anyway, and the media will lap it up and feed it back to you, so be prepared for it. They won't blame themselves because they had other things on their mind: diversity, equity, inclusion, and of course, trips to Ghana. Because there's no, by the way, you should know this, when you fly to Ghana for liberal purposes, no emissions on that plane. None at all. You're completely fine with the climate in that particular flight. Mayor's absence is considered a sign LA underestimated fire risk. Some residents said Mayor Karen Bass should have canceled her trip to Ghana when weather warnings in Los Angeles grew increasingly dire. And we saw this. You never know for sure exactly when a fire is going to start, but there was a good chance that it was coming around this time. She decided to go to Ghana to celebrate the inauguration of the president of Ghana, which is vitally important and has absolutely nothing to do with the job of being mayor of Los Angeles. But, I mean, she's terrible at that job, so I'm not surprised. She was asked about this by a reporter many, many times over and over and over again. And, of course, she was too terrified to even respond or even apologize. Watch.
Do you owe citizens an apology for being absent while their homes were burning? Do you regret cutting the fire department budget by millions of dollars, Madam Mayor? Have you nothing to say today? Have you absolutely nothing to say to the citizens today? Elon Musk says that you're utterly incompetent. Are you considering your position? Madam Mayor, have you absolutely nothing to say to the citizens today who are dealing with this disaster? No apology for them? Do you think you should have been visiting Ghana while this was unfolding back home?
I mean, just embarrassing. Absolutely embarrassing. She just ignores every one of those questions and stands there like she can't hear them. By the way, you know, if you're listening on podcast, you might think of that scene. You've seen it before where like someone's walking down the street and they're rushing by and they just kind of act like they don't hear it. No, she's just standing there. She's standing there a foot away from this guy and doesn't even give him the time of day to look at him or even say, look, of course, we're sorry that this happened. We're doing our best to make it right now or whatever. I don't know what you say. I guess maybe the best answer is there to kind of just stand there and look like you don't know what's going on. Now, Donald Trump has been commenting on this quite a bit as well and talking about probably the central figure in the problems here, which is Gavin Newsom. As L.A. burns, Trump blames Newsom and California governor pushes back. Now, you know, he's going to do this, of course. This is what he does. But this is also what he does. Let me give you the explanation. What should you do? Hey, there's no water to put out the fires there. Whose problem is that, Gavin? Listen to his answer.
What is the situation with the water? Obviously, in Palisades, ran out last night in the hydrants. I was talking to the firefighter on this block. Yeah. They left because there was no water in the hydrant here.
The local folks are trying to figure that out. I mean, just when you have a system that is not dissimilar to what we've seen in other extraordinarily large-scale fires, whether it be pipe, electricity, or whether it just be the complete overwhelm of the system. I mean, those hydrants are typical for two or three fires, maybe one fire. You have something at this scale, but again, that's going to be determined by the local.
Yeah, look, I mean, he puts his hands up. It's this big shoulder shrug. I don't know. What am I supposed to do? I guess they'll figure it out. Whatever. This is Mr. Centralized Control. He's suddenly like a federalist in his state and just wants to make sure local communities are the only ones that care about this at all. Bizarre. Now, and by the way, there's a lot of doubt as to whether there really was this lack of water to put out these fires. And understandably, you'd think, that can't possibly be true, right? Even the local news was saying it wasn't true until they found out a little something when they went to their own reporter.
You gotta have water. And my understanding is the reservoir was not refilled in time and in a timely manner to keep the hydrants going. So that's a failure, whether on DWP's part or another city agency. But this is basic stuff. This isn't high science here. And it's all about leadership and management that we're seeing a failure of. And all of these residents are paying the ultimate price for that.
Despite what you have heard from Caruso, no firefighters have told us that they are running out of water.
And let's go out to Gigi Graciette. She is live in Pacific Palisades. I know your signal's not the best, but Gigi, what can you tell us?
Well, firefighters have told me they have no water.
It's so good. The exact report they go to immediately after he denies that it's going on is someone saying, yeah, they've been telling me that they don't have any water. It's fascinating. And by the way, you should know, it's not only Los Angeles that's on fire. It's Gavin Newsom's 2028 presidential campaign. It is absolutely burning to the ground as we sit here and watch. And that's the one positive, I guess, you can take out of this horrible situation. Now, Trump talked about this over and over and over and over again. He warned Governor Newsom about terrible wildfire prevention in the wake of a deadly Palisades fire. And this is Gavin Newsom, by the way, back when he first full day in office. He announced an executive actions to strengthen California's emergency preparedness and response. It's not a coincidence that my first day as governor is focused on emergency preparedness. It's deliberate. It reflects intentionality. And it speaks to the priority that I place on emergency preparedness, response, and recovery, said Gavin Newsom while standing beside his emergency management and response team. Governor Newsom announced a series of actions aimed at protecting Californians from the growing threat of wildfires and other natural disasters. So that campaign up in smoke right now. He told them that was the reason he was there, was to prepare for something like that. And then, of course, look at what's happening. It's a complete catastrophe. Now, he's a Democrat, so he'll win every election in California. But do you really think this guy's a threat nationally? I mean, after watching him do things, he was terrible during COVID. He's been terrible about everything. He's a total joke. And I guess the idea that, he's on the media a lot and talks to the media a lot is supposed to give him the visibility to lead to a presidential campaign that he desperately wants to run in 2028. He probably will run it. I just don't think he has any chance after watching all of this go on. I should say, let me pause that. Not that he has no chance. I don't want to revisit this later on and hate myself even more. He has some chance, I suppose, because the country occasionally just goes completely insane. But outside of that possibility, the Gavin Newsom campaign in 2028 is pretty much a complete ash heap.
Stu does America.
So look back at the last year. In 2024, we had hurricanes, global conflicts, supply chain disruptions, a whole lot more. We get into 2025, we have these horrible fires in California. The message is clear. It is vitally important that you and your family be prepared to go into the new year. Whatever emergency situation might arise, you need to be ready for it. The New Year's resolution that you might make right now is, how can I solve the problem? Well, the good news is there's something that you can do to ensure that you and your loved ones have medical care when it's needed. It's a solution that thousands of people have already discovered. It's called the Jace case, and it'll allow you to stock up on medication right now so that you're prepared. I mean, you see this with the fires. So many of these people had to leave the area. They're out of town. If you have a situation where something pops up, your pharmacy may have just burned to the ground. It's nice if you're prepared. The Jace case is a personalized emergency kit that contains essential antibiotics and medications that treat the most common and deadly bacterial infections. It provides 5 life-saving antibiotics for emergency use. You just got to fill out a simple form online and you'll have it in case you need it. They even have ivermectin if you want to get that as an add-on. Jace.com is the place to go. Use the code STU at checkout for a discount on your order. The promo code is STU at Jace.com. The code is STU at Jace.com.
Kaffee in seiner besten Form mit der neuen Cubo One Kapselmaschine von Tchibo. In jeder Cubo-Kapsel steckt Spitzenkaffee aus besonderen Anbaugebieten. Für Espresso, Kaffeecrema oder Kaffee Grande auf Knopfdruck. Die neue Cubo One überzeugt mit Premium-Design, kompakter Größe und kleinem Einstiegspreis ab 29 Euro. Dank innovativer Press-Brew-Technologie wird jede Tasse besonders aromatisch mit samtiger Crema. Entdecke jetzt die Cubo-Kapselmaschinen in deiner Tchibo-Filiale und auf tchibo.de.
Joined once again by Sarah Gonzalez, host of Sarah Gonzalez Unfiltered, right here on Blaze TV. And of course, that's that show, just one of her many accomplishments. You know, Sarah, we recently celebrated our 1,000th episode here on Stu Does America. We went back and looked at the most frequent guests on the program. And here's the top 5 list. There you are. Number 4 on the list, 42 appearances on this stupid show. You've wasted that much time. I'm so sorry for that, but congratulations and thank you so much for all the time you spent with us.
Hold on. I take issue with this list, Stu, because it says Blaze Edition, but Dan is not a Blaze employee anymore. So I really am the rightful number 3 spot. I'm just going to go ahead and claim that. Okay.
All right. I like that. I like the fight there. We went back and forth on Dan because he was a Blaze employee. He's not really tackling me out. We kind of counted him anyway, but you're right. You're probably number 3 on the Blaze list. Number 4 overall.
And Jason, and Jason is like almost double me, but I come almost every time I'm asked. So what the hell, Stu?
Well, you do. It's just that Jason's really available. Like, you know, he's got nothing going on in his life whatsoever. So he'll just come on whenever, you know.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, though. I do appreciate that. And I should also point out that's not the only accomplishment because that one means almost nothing. But this one is actually really important. Sarah Gonzalez, you've been working with the Texas Family Project for a while now. We've talked about your really important work there, and you've got a big piece of news here. You've been named the new vice president of the Texas Family Project. This is awesome. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Thank you. I just, you know, we have partnered together. I have with this organization to, you know, defend Texas children and protect Texas children, of course, from the incoming, you know, leftist indoctrination. And we expect a fight ahead of us this session in that regard. And so we are ready and well prepared to fight off all of the leftists in Texas schools and, of course, school libraries and, of course, abroad. So I'm very, very excited. Thank you.
Yeah, very, very cool. Now, on that note, we happen to have a development on this front going on right now in the state of Texas. We've talked about this before, where Dade Phelan was the Speaker of the House here in Texas. And, you know, take us back to his reign here. It was not a positive one. He is a Republican, though, right? I mean, he should be doing lots of conservative things.
I mean, I think he's a Republican probably because he was too drunk when he filled out his application and meant to select a Democrat and just hit the wrong option there because he didn't act like one ever. So, of course, Dade Phelan was the previous Speaker of the House in Texas. He supported Democrats for key chair positions, key committee positions that, of course, should have gone to Republicans because the people of Texas said, we want Republicans in charge. We want Republicans driving the car. And so what Dade did with that power was he handed it off to all of these Democrats in an attempt to, I guess, you know, play ball with all of these crazy radical leftists who are trying to infiltrate our state. And so the grassroots, I'm sure you would imagine, Stu, were not pleased with Dade Phelan's tenure. And he, of course, reigned over the impeachment of Ken Paxton. He just fought against conservatives seemingly his entire tenure. So when it came to this time around, people were throwing their name into the hat for who was going to run for speaker. He claimed after he barely hang on in his own primary during a runoff, he claimed that he was going to be the next speaker and there was going to be no debate about it. And then, of course, in the 11th hour, he dropped out of the race. So now we're left with, you know, we've got David Cook in the Republican Party, and we've got Dustin Burroughs also in the Republican Party. But unfortunately, he is like a lieutenant of Dade's. So we'd be getting the same here in the state of Texas. We find ourselves at a crossroads again. And it's going to be a fight, Stu, because I know we talked about this on Glenn's show not that long ago. You had David Cook and Dustin Burroughs, who had just thrown his name into the hat. And we were talking about who the GOP caucus was going to choose. Well, the GOP caucus met, Stu. They met, and the GOP caucus, they voted for David Cook, but not before the Burroughs rhinos took their ball and went home. They actually left the GOP caucus meeting during that meeting because they didn't like that their guy was not going to win. He did not get the majority of votes. He did not get the 76 votes required to win. And so they, in a toddler-like way, took their ball and they went home. And Dustin Burroughs, Stu, said, you know what? I have a plan. My plan is not over. I actually am going to be the rightful speaker because I'm going to work with the Democrats. I'm going to get all of the Democrats to vote for me. And that is how I will get over the threshold and I will win a majority in the Texas House and I will be the next Texas House speaker. Now, I want to ask you, Stu, do you think that after there was a bloodbath in the primaries where all of these Texas grassroots activists had awakened and said, we are not going to allow you to squander our Republican power anymore, do you think that the Texas grassroots activists are going to be pleased after they worked so hard to get more conservative candidates, after they worked so hard to elect people who said they would ban Democrat chairs from the Texas House, do you think that the grassroots would be thrilled about Dustin Burroughs attempting to hijack the Texas House by working and cutting deals with the Democrats rather than following the GOP caucus rules?
I mean, I would assume that anyone who went along with that from the Republican side would be seeing a strong primary challenge in an upcoming election. Because you're right, the grassroots is going to see through this, right? They're not going to be excited about a Democrat basically being elected here because that's what it would be. If the Democrats are all voting for you and you get a few Republicans to get over this line, I mean, isn't that basically what you're admitting? You're admitting that you're more Democrat than Republican.
Exactly right. Exactly right. I don't know if these people need glasses when they're filling out their applications or what, but the good news is, Stu, here in the state of Texas, they changed the rules a couple of years ago within the Texas GOP. And so the Texas GOP has the ability to, of course, censure any of their legislators. Now, usually, typically, like when we talk about censuring in, especially in D.C., it's like, oh, no, a sternly worded letter to the manager. What's that going to do? But this now has teeth. Since 2022, they changed the language. This now has teeth because if you do get censured, the GOP has the option of removing you from the primary ballot for up to 24 months. So not only could these people be facing a primary challenger, these people could be facing a situation where they're not even going to be on the primary ballot at all within the Republican Party if the GOP decides to take that next step. Now, I'm hearing a lot of GOP activists who are saying, pull the lever, pull the lever. It's time to push the red button, because if these guys don't fall in line and they instead choose to work with the Democrats, when the people of Texas overwhelmingly said, we want the Republicans in charge and we want you guys to use your power, they're in for a really, really tough ride. I just saw a poll recently that it came out from, I believe it was Texans United for a Conservative Majority. And they actually said, it said it within that poll that Dustin Burrows is already underwater in his own district over in the Lubbock area.
Wow.
So you got to believe if even his own people are already like, yeah, we don't like this. We don't want this. You agreed to go by the GOP caucus rules. And the GOP caucus rules say whoever wins in this meeting, whoever is the rightful winner, whoever gets the majority, is the GOP nominee, and you guys have to vote for him. And now they're saying, well, it's not our guy, so we don't like the rules, so we're not going to play by them. Mm. They're in for a really, really, really tough road. I just kind of really quick here, Stu, I tweeted, well, I X-posted, however you want to call it, over at Dustin Burrows the other day. And I said, do you want to do this the easy way or the hard way? Because, like, we're going to get there eventually. And if you want to do it the hard way, I got to tell you, it's not going to be a fun time for you. So we'll see what happens. They have this new vote on Tuesday.
Do you think, what are the chances of this working, and what can people do to actually get involved in this?
Yeah, well, I would encourage anyone within the state of Texas to go. You can go to the Texas House website, and you can actually type in, there's a place where it says, who is my rep? And you can type in your address and they can show you who their representative is. And I would urge everyone within the sound of my voice to contact your representative or your incoming representative, whichever one that is, if it's the same or if it's new, and tell them that you, as their constituent, would demand that they vote for the rightful GOP speaker, who is, of course, David Cook. And so we're trying to push all of these Texans to go out, talk to your representative, urge them, tell them if you do not support the rightful GOP nominee that we voted you in for, we will be actively primarying you. We will be actively supporting a primary opponent, because this is the time, Stu, that all of these people who just barely hung on by the skin of their teeth in their primaries, they realize what's in store. They saw what happened to all of their friends. They saw what happened to this record number of Texas legislators who got voted out in the primary and replaced with someone more conservative, because Texans are awake now more than ever. David Cook has the support of Texas Governor Greg Abbott. He has the support of Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick. He has the support of Attorney General Ken Paxton. And if we really want unity in the Republican Party here in the state of Texas, Texans must demand that their representative vote for the rightful nominee, David Cook. And that's what I would encourage everyone to go do before Tuesday, please.
Before Tuesday. Okay, so Cook good, Burrows bad. Remember that. Keep track of that. And
B,
just,
it's a B. Burrows. Yeah. Burrows is B, and B is for bad.
There you go. See, this is easy to remember. I will also point out, this is not just a Texas issue. This is actually, I think, the most central issue to conservatism across the country. Bright red states with weak representation, weak policy. There's no reason for it. I can understand it in, you know, Maine. I don't understand it in Texas. We can solve this problem with stuff like this. Sarah Gonzalez, catch her right here on the Sarah Gonzalez Unfiltered program on Blaze TV. Sarah, thanks for all the work you're doing. Congratulations, Madam Vice President, and thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
I think it was yesterday we did a show, Biden's parting shots or something, where it was going into Biden's record of the last couple of weeks, where he's been doing all these sorts of things to sort of undermine the Trump administration and his policies. We're seeing another example kind of like that right now. Biden administration is announcing its final military aid package for Ukraine before leaving office. Just another $500 million. That's it. That's all it is. Just another $500 million that they just found, I guess. I'm sure couldn't have been better put to use going to Ukraine. We will see. It will be interesting to see what Trump does with this, because he has been sort of unclear as to where he stands on this. He wants it over. You know, he said it would never have happened if he was in office. He's also said stuff, though, like if Putin doesn't make a deal, we'll give Ukraine more weapons than they could ever imagine and have ever received before. So I don't know. I mean, J.D. Vance was really clear on that one, and he was like a flat no. Trump is a little bit more in negotiating mode on that one. So we will see where that lands. My guess is he's not going to want to give them much more money. So we will see, though, when he gets into office. Now, Elon Musk and Doge, they're going to work, and they said $2 trillion is how much we can save. No, they're saying probably not $2 trillion. Musk told political strategist Mark Penn in an interview broadcast on X that the $2 trillion figure was a best case outcome, and then he thought there was only a good shot at cutting half of that. It would still be amazing, by the way, if they cut $1 trillion. When he said $2 trillion initially, it was quickly dismissed as implausible by budget experts who said the entire discretionary budget was only $1.7 trillion. Which is true. However, like usually when you're saying you're cutting a certain amount of money, it's over a 10-year period. That's typically the way these budget numbers work. So you'd think about $200 billion a year is what you'd hope to get. Now, we've talked about how this can actually happen. Part of the reason why there's a couple different ways to focus on things if you're in the Doge committee. One is cutting budget numbers, trying to get those numbers down. The problem is, Congress sets those levels. So to get those down, you need a congressional bill eventually. What you can do is run the program that serves the same amount of people in the same way and not spend all the money. That's something you can do to save money. And then go back to Congress and say, hey, we had a $2 trillion budget or $200 billion budget, let's just say, for a program, and we only spent $100 billion. We don't need any more money for this year, or we only need $100 billion. And those sort of cuts can continue for years and years in the future. That's one way to do it. The other way to do it, which is the more plausible way, and I think the more likely way, you're not going to get the big savings number out of this approach, but really just going in there and going after the regulations, getting rid of the red tape, making it easier for businesses. Those sorts of things, I think, are just as related to what Doge's mission statement is, but you can do it in a, again, it's Department of Government efficiency. And I think when I think of that, I think regulation is going to be the prime target because you can do a lot of that stuff a lot more easily than actually cutting numbers on a budget, though. Please try to do that as well. There's a Axios has a story of 100 executive orders that Donald Trump is planning to put through. This is a meeting with Senate Republicans. He kind of gave them a preview of some of those. A couple of them are big border initiatives. Title 42, something we talked about a lot on the show during the Biden presidency. He wants that to come back. That would be very, very smart, assuming it can be done. It was put on initially through a COVID sort of warning, like, hey, we can't let people come across the border that might have COVID. I don't know exactly how they're going to put it on again. I'm sure they have some legal strategy to do that, but they're going to have that pass muster. But that would be helpful to the border. More aggressively using a part of the Immigration and Nationality Act, which allows state and local law enforcement to assist. So that's kind of a big one. Also, they're going to go after the Laken Riley Act. Now, this is going to be the first bill that the Senate Democrats are going to be having to face early vote with the Laken Riley Act. This is the first thing basically coming up in this new Senate. This would mandate federal detention of immigrants without legal status accused of theft, burglary, and other related crimes. So basically, you're an illegal immigrant. You come in, you commit another crime. Right now, we're in a situation where a sanctuary city or a sanctuary state might, kind of not send you back to deport you. They might not let authorities get involved. This would require them to send that prisoner to federal prison. And it only makes sense, right? Like that they would be held there and eventually hopefully taken out of the country forever. So we're talking about violent criminals that are here illegally. Why you would want to protect them, I don't know. But what you're going to see is probably 40 Democrats voting against it. Now, there are some that are voting for it. John Fetterman and Ruben Gallego from Arizona have both signed on as co-sponsors of the bill. Gary Peters from Michigan, Jackie Rosen from Nevada, Mark Kelly, Arizona, Alyssa Slotkin from Michigan have all said they're going to vote for this bill with the Republicans. And Shaheen from New Hampshire is another one who's indicating she looks like she's going to. She hasn't said for sure, but it looks like she's going to vote with Republicans on this. So this will be a bipartisan bill with a decent amount of Democrat support. It's so blatantly obvious that this should be done that it's hard to believe you don't have every Democrat on this one. But I guess it's a positive. At least we got a few.
Sehr gut. sehr gut, sehr gut.
Sehr gut?
Wieso Steuer ist sehr gut? Das sagen ganz viele.
Cool, wer sagt das?
Stiftung Warentest, Computerbild, Focus Money, Chip, Finanztipp, such dir was aus.
Mega, aber das ist doch bestimmt kompliziert.
Nö, einfach Foto von der Lohnsteuerbescheinigung machen und fertig.
Klingt sehr gut.
Ist sehr gut. Hol dir dein Geld zurück mit Wieso Steuer.
Donald Trump, Barack Obama, George W. Bush, Bill Clinton, all at the Jimmy Carter funeral, along with Joe Biden as well, there to hear the, you know, the whole big state funeral. If you were president of the United States and you get up there in age a little bit, the possibility probably discussed among you and your family and your associates as to whether you want the state funeral. What are you saying on that one? I gotta say, I'm a no. I'm a straight no on this. I don't want the pomp and circumstance. I don't want a bunch of political officials gathering around saying stuff about me. Let me have a nice ceremony with my family. That's all I would want. I certainly wouldn't want this. I wouldn't want to cost my country a few million dollars as we go out the door. I just don't get it. But, you know, hey, that's me. I think most presidents do like that stuff. And maybe there's a reason for it that I'm not getting. But it's not one that I would be in favor of, at least for my own administration, which, by the way, would be the best one ever, just in case you were wondering. Mexico has a president. They're clapping. She is clapping back at Trump, suggesting a new name for the U.S., America Mexicana. See, this is she's sassing President Trump, or soon to be President Trump again, because he said the Gulf of America thing. And, you know, she's coming back in this. And I would just be careful, right? And this is something that you should think about if you're the president of Mexico, because you will get lauded by the American press. Oh, you're taking a shot at the president. We like you better than him. You'll get that. You'll get some favor from Mexico. The Mexican press will like you. You'll probably get a swell of national pride, right, for, you know, coming back, firing back at the big president in the country next door. But you should be reminded that Donald Trump proudly holds grudges. You should be reminded that the entire Mexican economy depends on us being nice to you. And I don't know if really what you want to do is come out and show how sassy you are to the president of the United States. Now, look, I get you're a sovereign nation. I get that you can say, no, we don't think that's a good idea. But like a lot of the economic progress in your nation, not to mention dealing with your gang, your criminal gangs and narco state that is developing inside your borders, a lot of the reason why that occasionally goes well is because of the United States saying a lot of not being as aggressive as they could be in protecting their borders, in holding lines, in tariffs, and so many other things. Like, I wouldn't call Donald Trump a sleeping giant. He seems to be awake all the time and very much on the ball. But I would say try not to wake him up any more than he already is, because that's not going to work out well for you. You know, sure, our second largest city is currently burning to the ground, but the real weather tragedy is happening right here in Dallas, Texas, where we had to trek through up to a half an inch of snow today to get here to do the show for you. So we do thank you for joining us, and I hope you appreciate our bravery that, you know, we do this for you. Now, this show started you know, back a couple weeks before COVID hit. It was like 2020, like February 2020. And we were here for a couple weeks, and then no one came in for like a year. It was me and Sarah Gonzalez were the only people here for a very long time. And it was, it showed our bravery as a team. We came in and we were brave for you. And so we appreciate you tuning in for our efforts. I will say scary times are coming to Florida as well. And I hope you're preparing yourself. This is an official, it's a real alert. This is really happening. Cold weather coming to Florida. And Florida residents are warned to prepare for falling iguanas amid temperature drop. Keep that headline up there for a second, because I want to make sure you understand the seemingly the dead dog in the upper corner there is not a dead dog from the cold or an iguana crushing it. It's an ad because someone gave it toxic food. So that's a totally separate thing. It's got nothing to do with the story, but there is a dead dog there, or at least probably a sleeping one. This is what happens in Florida, because it's usually warm in Florida. It gets cold in Florida. Iguanas are up in the trees. Apparently, they're too stupid to just, go inside or find, inside a tree, get a little shelter. No, they stay on the tree branches, they freeze, and they come to the earth. And then this thing falls in your head. Imagine this giant creature thing falling on your head. Not this one in particular. That's just a random iguana picture. That one may have died 5 years ago. I have no idea. But watch out for falling iguanas, Florida.